From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. And on this day, we'll look at how the many, many bills about to be considered for the session are likely to fare. And a new study shows that for more than half of Portland residents, housing isn't what experts consider affordable. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Lawmakers return to the State House for their second regular session in January. They're already proposing more than 250 new bills for consideration. Legislative leaders are meeting tomorrow to decide which measures will be allowed into the session. Mal Leary joins me now from our State House Bureau to talk about the proposals and what might happen to them. Mal, that is a lot of bills to take up in the 4 months of the session.
It certainly is, Nora, when you take into account that they have carried over hundreds of bills from the session that ended earlier this year in August. And that includes like dozens of bonding proposals for all sorts of projects. They add up to hundreds of millions of dollars, and you know that maybe one or two might make it through. As for all these bills that are coming forward, most won't make it. It takes at least six votes to allow bill into the session. The council's evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, so every bill will need at least one leader from the other party to support it for it to be even considered in the legislative session that comes in January.
So when I read all these press releases about this representative or that senator proposing legislation, that might not even get considered in January.
Indeed, I would say it's likely most will not make it. Part of the reason is they're all issuing those news releases is to try and engender some publicity and maybe get a little support for the bill they're trying to get into the session. The reality is, with all those bills we were talking about being carried over, it's likely that there's a bill somewhere close enough to the topic that can be amended by the legislature instead of allowing in a whole new bill, which then has to be printed, a hearing held on the proposal, and that starts to add up.
So what are some of the bills that are being proposed? Are these new things, or have we seen them before?
Well, in some cases, they are absolutely new, like there's a proposed constitutional amendment to take away the power of a governor to remove a sheriff from office. I would dare say that there were very few lawmakers, if any, that knew that the governor had the power to remove a sheriff from office before the flap with the governor and the 16 sheriffs over immigration policies a few weeks ago. So it'll be interesting to see if that picks up a Republican vote in the council to even be considered during the session. And then there are other ideas that have been considered in past sessions, like legislation dealing with dangerous dogs and another bill that increases the number of liquor licenses that can be increased.
So if a bill doesn't make it through this screening, is that it for the bill? Is it done? Does it ever have another way of getting considered?
Sometimes I think it's never over up here until it's over. Lawmakers can appeal next month if their proposal is rejected. But most appeals have been rejected in the past. Remember, Nora, this is an election year session, and many of those on leadership are running for re-election or they're running for another office. And they don't want to be here into May because they let in too many bills for consideration.
Okay, Mel, thanks.
Thank you, Nora.
Park advocacy groups say new proposed fee increases for 17 of the National Park Service's most popular sites, including Acadia, have come as a surprise. The NPS said in a written statement yesterday that it's accepting public comments on its proposed new peak season fee of $70 per private non-commercial vehicle. That is a big increase. Right now, weekly passes at Acadia are $25 or $50 for an annual entrance pass. Martha Searchfield is executive director of the Bar Harbor Chamber of Commerce. She says her organization will likely be weighing in on any plan that could have economic implications for her community.
I do think members are going to have some concerns. Like I said, I haven't really had a chance to talk to anybody yet because we just found this out. But I do think there is going to be some concern with the rate increase.
David McDonald, president and CEO of the Friends of Acadia Conservation Group, said his organization opposes entrance fee increases if they make it more likely Congress will reduce federal appropriations that support the parks. A new report by Portland housing staff finds a majority of city residents don't make enough money to rent a home within what are considered the standards of affordability. Fred Bever has more.
The standard rule of thumb holds that to be affordable, a house or apartment should cost no more than 30% of household income. By that measure, the report found that last year, more than 60% of Portland renters could not afford the average monthly rent of $1,052 for a two-bedroom home in the city. Mary Davis is the director of the city's Housing and Community Development Division.
It was a bit eye-opening, but I wasn't entirely surprised. You know, overall, we know that we have issues here with housing in Portland, and we wanted this report to help us establish sort of a baseline.
The report also found that an even larger proportion of city residents could not afford the median price of buying a home in the city. It comes in the wake of a sharp increase in city property values and rents over this decade, and just before a November vote on a ballot item that would limit rent hikes. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Two dogs found by the courts to be dangerous have gone missing in the Waterville area. As Jennifer Mitchell reports, the pair of pit bulls were facing euthanasia when their owner says she lost them Tuesday afternoon.
Police say the dogs were being housed at an animal shelter in Waterville, where their owner was allowed to visit them.
The owner of those pit bulls took them for a walk. 10, 15 minutes later, she returned to the shelter and said they had gotten away from her and ran into the woods.
Waterville Police Chief Joseph Massey says he won't speculate on what may have happened, but as of late Wednesday afternoon, he says officers were still trying to interview the dog's owner, Danielle Jones.
Yes, she's the last one that had access and control of those dogs, and we have not received any reports since she reported them missing from anyone who has seen two pit bulls running around, so we need to talk to her.
The two dogs in question last summer got loose from their yard and attacked a Boston Terrier named Fergie Rose, who later died. The dogs also bit and wounded the terrier's owner. An order to euthanize both pit bulls as dangerous animals was upheld by the Maine Supreme Judicial Court on Tuesday. Massey says if anyone does happen to see the two dogs, to use an abundance of caution and call authorities. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And finally today, oily and smelly. Atlantic menhaden are one of the least sexy fish around. But this humble fish, also called bunker or pogie, has deep roots off the coast of New England. It's believed Native Americans taught the pilgrims to fertilize their crops with the fish, and for decades, millions of tons of menhaden were pulled out of the ocean. Now there's a movement to preserve this vital species, not just for the fishermen who catch it, but for animals who eat it. Patrick Scahill of Connecticut Public Radio has that story.
John McMurray says he doesn't really believe in reincarnation. But if it's true, the charter boat captain jokes he's probably going to come back as a bunker.
Kind of fast-growing, short-lived species. Things that are, frankly, put on this earth so that other things could eat them.
Eaten by ospreys, tuna, and sometimes something a bit bigger.
You'll be fishing on a bunker school, and 20 feet away from you, all of a sudden they'll all spray out at the same time, and these whales will come up and open their mouths, like 20 feet, so close you could smell their breath.
Today, it's a rainy morning on Long Island Sound. The sun's just flickered over the horizon, and McMurray and I are out on a boat looking for menhaden. As we pull out of the Norwalk Cove Marina, Captain Corey Crochetier explains what to look for.
A lot of times you'll see birds on them, like the cormorants you see there, or you're looking for what we call snaps.
Or pops, little dimples on the water. We spot a few, and Crochetier drives towards them. McMurray tosses in a net and quickly hauls it all up. Dozens of bunkers spill onto the deck.
About that, huh?
There's a couple there, huh?
Yeah, maybe your machine's not working.
But menhaden harvests weren't always like this. Joseph Gordon is with the Pew Charitable Trust. He's riding on the boat with us.
Up until 2012, there was no coastwide limit on this fish at all.
And Gordon says all that fishing had an impact.
There were very noticeable declines that were happening, you know, especially around 2010. And so it was both a sense that the population is declining and also that its value was so important that we needed to protect it.
So in 2012, an interstate compact called the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission took action. It set a cap on the coastwide harvest of menhaden.
Before, the harvest had been fairly unrestricted. And so that was a really big shift in how we manage menhaden.
Megan Ware is with the commission, which is now looking at another shift in how the fishery is managed.
Menhaden serve as prey for lots of different predator species. And so this will look at not only the abundance of menhaden, but also the abundance of other predator species.
Corey Crochet here says the 2012 coastwide catch cap worked, and he hopes that if passed, new limitations would too.
We had no menhaden for years, and then all of a sudden, within 2 years of that reduction, they're just everywhere. Without those menhaden, it's like we have no fishery. No striped bass in the spring, we have no bluefish in the summer.
Crocheteer says he hopes menhaden stay abundant. For the environment, sure, but also for his business selling fishing boats. Because he says if he's got a great fishery in the area, that's more people that want to go out and fish. Patrick Scahill, WNPR News.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.